NetCredit is here to say yes, because you're more than a credit score. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partners. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You guys can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. In this episode of the show, I am joined by professional skateboarder and noted author Walker Ryan. He just had a new book come out entitled Off Clark. It is sort of a follow-up to his original novel, Top of Mason. Links to purchase those books are in the description of this podcast. I really enjoyed having Walker on the program, kind of picking his brain about the world of professional skateboarding and how that translates to fiction. Had a great time talking to him, one of my absolute favorite guests on the program. So I hope that you guys read his books. I hope you guys enjoy this conversation. And if you want to support this program, please subscribe to patreon.com/takecast. You can get bonus episodes of this show and support its continued creation. You can tell a friend about the program. That's always useful and helpful. Or you can leave a rating or review on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. Now let's go ahead and get into the episode. All right, everyone. Very hyped, very excited about this to welcome back to the program one Mr. Walker Ryan. He has authored another book. I guess it would have been pretty deep pandemic times when I brought you on to talk about your first book, and a new book, Off Clark, has been written, and got to be the first time in skateboarding history a new video part came out to promote a book release. That's got to be a first.
Well, first of all, thanks so much for having me back. It's a pleasure, Davis. I thought it was definitely like something I was thinking, oh, these two things could line up. Let's see how this works. If there's any connection that people will be hyped on, video part, book. I'm not sure if there is. I feel like people who are into the book is one thing. People who are into the video part is totally other thing. But, you know, I thought why not seize some exposure that might be happening on the internet.
For sure. So the first book you wrote, Top of Mason, great book. If you guys are interested in it, you should go read it. I'll have links to purchase all this stuff in the description. The new book is called Off Clark. And I didn't read any, you know, reviews. I didn't know anything about it. So like, I'm going to read this for sure. I was very surprised to like get into it and realize it's not about the same dude. This is not a sequel. Obviously it's still, you know, in the world of professional skateboarding. So that is sort of interesting because Top of Mason ends, there's plenty of different ways it could have gone, right? Yeah. And so what's sort of the thought process like? What was your research like writing Off Clark?
Well, so I really wanted to tell a story that had to do with a traveling professional skateboarder. So much of my experience as in the skateboarding industry has been rooted in exploring, traveling, and the weird situations you get into when you're just on the road. And since Top of Mason was such a San Francisco focused story, and the skaters in that story are so San Francisco based, and really like San Francisco is almost a character in itself, like so much of the story is driven by that city. For the second book, I really wanted to just have a whole new set of characters and a whole different adventure that happens. And my plan is to have the characters that I write about in each novel like maybe intersect and pop in and out, you know, like in this new one there's a little mention.
I was gonna say characters. There's like one little mention of the guy from the first book, right?
Yeah, I hope to someday bring them all together into some kind of like wild story. We'll see. It's still the ideas are still percolating, but basically for the story I wanted to tell, it just didn't really work for the characters that exist in Top of Mason. So I just brought in a few new ones. And that's basically, that's the motivation there.
Yeah. And so, I mean, so I'm drawing a little bit on other interviews you've done. I'm going to try and not ask you the exact same things that the nightclub guys asked you and stuff. So, you know, something you've talked
about. Actually read it. A lot of times I get interviewed by people who haven't read it. So I really appreciate this.
You know, that's actually like, that's so, as someone who really likes to read and really likes, is interested in the authors, like David Foster Wallace would always say this because he did a huge book tour after he wrote Infinite Jest. Uh-huh. And basically he realized like a week into doing this press junket, he's like, no one's read my book, man. I wrote this. He realized, he's like, I wrote this like 900 page book and I'm doing all these press tours and no one's read it. So I'm answering the same questions and they're responding in the same way. So I've always tried to do that when I have people on to talk about their book. Most of the time, it's just because I've read their book. And then I'm like, well, I wonder if this person would do my show because their book was really good. But so something you've talked about is professional skateboarding is just so weird. And most people in skateboarding, like probably average dude at the skate park, doesn't really realize how weird the world of professional skateboarding is. But then a normal person who's just working their normal gig and they're like, professional skateboarding, like, what is that? How do you get paid? Who pays you? Do you have health insurance? Like what? I feel like sort of you're kind of uniquely like lucky in that way. Like you have got all this great source material that no one has any clue about.
Yeah, totally. And so, yeah, I wanted to basically, for anyone who asks me that question, which I've been asked my entire life or ever since I sort of started on the pro skating track, you know, when they ask me, what does it mean? I can just hand them this book now. Be like, get through the book. You'll get a gist.
You'll figure it out.
Yeah. No. So through the character Nina, who's like, you know, creating an investigative podcast about this skateboarder who disappeared, I get to, you know, through her sort of reveal some of the things that I feel like would be interesting to somebody who's like totally jumping in trying to figure it all out. And so there's a little bit I get to have fun in that sense of like explain some things, hopefully not over explain, but like from the perspective of someone who maybe knew nothing going in, and get at some of the things that I think are the most interesting. Like, you know, they're all 1099 contractors. They just are expected to be sort of these like self-marketing people who just promote themselves through videos, and it doesn't really make sense. Like, what do you mean videos? Like, why don't you compete? And then, you know, tying in a plot point that I've talked about before, so I don't think it's spoiling anything, the fact that this pro skater gets, you know, approached by a CIA agent who doesn't really buy the pro skating thing, and like that is based on something that's really happened to one of my friends. And I feel like it's really hard. It was hard for him to explain in this real life situation. Like, okay, yeah, I'm not in any competition. Yeah, I don't compete, but I'm like traveling to all these countries for a reason. And he's like, Iran, Somalia, West Africa, all over the Middle East. Why? And so the character in this novel also has that sort of lifestyle, which I was doing too. Like, you know, I had a friend, Patrick Wallner. I have a friend, Patrick Wallner, who was just dead set on making skate videos that take place in countries that we've never seen skate videos
from. That you wouldn't
go
to.
And you wouldn't really go to. So it was all about just like going there and making it happen. And we would get our sponsors to help us pay for it. Sometimes it would be sponsored by Red Bull in its entirety. And that was... it's weird to say, but that was the gig, you know? And so
pretty good work if you can get it right.
Yeah, it was fun and sketchy sometimes, you know. Sometimes I was super uncomfortable. Sometimes I would just pass things up, like, nah, I don't really want to go to North Korea with you again. I mean, I'm not again, like my friend had been several times and I was just like, no, I'm good.
Or he's like, been, your buddy has been skateboarding in North Korea.
Yeah, he's done multiple skate trips to North Korea, or trips where he then skates a little
skates.
bit, but it's tricky.
Yeah. That's unreal.
Yeah, I mean, he went to every country on the Eurasian continent. So in Europe and Asia, he went to every single country and put out a book. So he, because he was on this quest to check off every country, you know, he would invite skaters like me to go on to sort of give it a reason for him to make some money from it and just, you know, motivation to make it more fun. And so, yeah, that was a big reason we went to a lot of places. Like, and in the novel, Oman is one of those countries where we went, and I can't say I'd even heard of Oman before. I was basically like planning the trip, you know? So,
So I mean, I was going to ask about inspirations for this main character. The mental image I got in my head, and he's Middle Eastern, right? He is, I guess his dad is Syrian. Is that correct? So, but what I had in my head was, I know you'll know this, is Kenny Reed writing the postcard in front of the pyramids and Static 2 to Paul Scheer. That, for me, I was like, that's this dude. It's like, this is the guy who's just like sending postcards to his mates when he's like nose sliding in front of the pyramids in Giza.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I like to say a Kenny Reed of this era, like someone who's like, let's say his 20s, had the Kenny Reed approach and has decided he doesn't want to do the social media thing. So there's a couple pro skaters who don't do social media. Wes Kramer, Jake Johnson, those kind of guys. Oh. So they're elusive. So you really, like, it's easy to just, you know, in this day and age, if you're interested in a professional skateboarder, any person really, you can see what they're up to most of their life, you know. But there's a few guys who've maintained sort of some mystery to them, and Kenny Reed was definitely that person. But that was normal, and everyone had some mystery to them. But he was traveling constantly, so it's sort of like those two worlds. And Kenny's a good friend too, and so there's like a, you know, I got to know him well, and he really did have this sort of pure. I say did because he's not really traveling professionally anymore. He's a coach and still travels, but he's got a family and stuff. But he really did have this like pure like need to discover and really interact with the people he was, you know, meeting along the way, local skaters, and he would spend time, and he really did the nomad thing for real. Like I was a nomad for like basically 5-6 years, like not living anywhere, but I would go on like a 2-week trip and I would come back, and I would like go on a month long trip and come back, and he would really kind of like hit the road. So that was the motivation for Mo, this character, where it's like, it's the 2020s and or the 20 teens. I can't remember exactly when I said it. Oh yeah. It was definitely late 20 teens. And he's, you know, you never know where he's at. So when he hits up the filmer, like, hey, meet me here, we're going to make a video. You know, that's all you get.
You want to talk about things that are hard to explain. Explaining being a professional skateboarder is hard, but imagine explaining being a professional skateboard filmer for
totally.
I feel like that is, which is like kind of delved into in the book and this character Richie, mm-hmm. but I obviously, like, he's not the investigative focus, but that is, I mean, that's a whole other thing of like, you know,
yeah.
being a 1099 contractor, but like you have to supply the gear and you gotta, yep. and I mean, now like Instagram really has, and I think we talked about this a little bit maybe the last time we did this, but like Instagram, and it's even more so now, like yeah. Instagram has changed the complexity of skateboarding so much, because I would assume, because I hear about these guys, you know, these dudes have like YouTube channels and stuff who I've mm-hmm. never seen skate, who don't have, you know, are you know, never got flowed boards or whatever, but like they're just as much of a pro skater as Eric Costin or whatever, because they make a living off skateboarding, but right. they didn't have to get co-signed by anyone basically because of Instagram.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah, I mean, the filmer, I feel for filmers the most, because they are really the reason that any pro skater has a career, yet they're the most underappreciated in this weird way, like by the industry. It's really difficult for filmers to get jobs, like real salary jobs. I mean, everyone sort of, I mean, I should have gone more into it in the book, but like the way the economy of a skate filmer works is you film a guy, it might take 10 minutes, it might take like 4 hours or multiple days, and then the clip sort of hangs in limbo until it ends up in a video, and then maybe you get like $50 or maybe you get like $100, you know, and it could be like years down the line, like from the day that you filmed it. Some companies work a little bit more responsibly, I want to say, like they will give filmers day rates, and so then it's just like whatever they film that day that goes to the company, and that's that. But so much happens in this fuzzy, oh, but we're homies and we're just hanging out anyway, and like this is what you want to do, and companies take advantage of that for sure, because they're like, oh yeah, he wants to do that, so if he wants to film our guys who we actually pay, Yeah, that's fine.
And he gets exposure because we put his name at the end of the video.
Yeah, yeah, and then that's that. And so that's happened a lot. And the character Richie, I'm thinking of as one of those guys. So it's like he and Mo, they make these projects together. They're very much passion projects. They can make money from them, but it's you know, not what they deserve necessarily. But Richie still has to work like a normal job. And that's the case for a lot of filmmakers I know and have worked with, that it's just like, it is something they love. It is something that they like are, you know, passionate about doing. But at the end of the day, it's just really hard to make a living from it.
Now, are even, so like we're talking about like 1099s and stuff, are even like Nike and Adidas guys 1099s, or do they get like, you know, like do these dudes have, like if skaters? You have a shoe, yeah, like does like Janoski have, like he's gotta have a better, I mean he's got one of the best, maybe he's not a good example because he's got like this amazing best-selling like crossover success, yeah. Shoe, but that, I mean, that would be crazy to me if like, you know, you've got Naomi Osaka in an ad with, I don't know, whoever, iShot or something, you know, and yeah. Then one of these people is getting paid millions of dollars and this other dude is just getting a stipend when he turns in clips.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about the skaters?
Yeah, yeah, the skaters, the huge companies.
Yeah, the skaters will still get, like, they'll be 1099, but they will usually get a contract that is a monthly stipend. So that's sort of, like, set, and it can be, you know, $1,000 a month, or it can be, like, you know, 50. And some of those big companies do pay their skaters really well. But I think they are still just independent contractors. Like they're not employees by any means. So no health insurance and no benefits, you know, there's still a barrier from being an actual, like, properly compensated worker.
which is crazy. Yeah. So inside the book, this character Nina, who ends up dating our main character, I was just, I don't think this is like super relevant, but where did the idea of a person being unwilling to fly because of their greenhouse gas imprint, like where what was that born out of?
So that was actually born from the same trip that inspired much of the Oman section, the Middle East section. When I was in Jordan, I met some nonprofit workers. They had this called Apt Arts, and they had like painted this skate park. Regardless, they had just talked to me about a friend of theirs who would have been there had they not made this commitment to never fly because of their greenhouse gas effect, or I mean their
right,
you know, their commitment to just like
their commitment to the environment.
Exactly. And so I just thought that was fascinating, and I know there's some people out there, and I feel like Greta has maybe been that sort of person. But there's still not many people. It's definitely a little bit more popular, but at the time, this was 2015, it was just like, I'd never heard of that. And it really made me check myself, because I am, well, you know, I like try to be good on that front. And I realized like, whoa, I fly all the time. Like, how bad am I actually? And I just thought it would be an interesting love dynamic for a love story, where it's like, oh, I'm this traveling skateboarder, I'm like so cool. But like from her eyes, who has made a commitment to like never fly because of, you know, these reasons, you know, there's a little tension there. So I just thought that'd be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, well, the whole traveling skateboarder thing, it's so funny. I feel like the traveling skateboarder is kind of this like, you know, romantic like trope, maybe even, mm-hmm. But then, I mean, and, you would actually be a perfect person to answer this. So like skateboarders seem very cool on the surface a lot of the time. And my experience is 70% of them are, but you also mm-hmm. do meet a lot of skateboarders who like kind of suck to be around. They like, they, yeah. You know, a lot of them, we talked about this last time, didn't go to college and like, just like social stuff. Skateboarders mm-hmm. also drink a lot and smoke yeah. a lot of pot, which is yeah. talked about in the book, which is like, there's nothing wrong with that. But when it's like every day or like the total center of mm-hmm. activities, like that is like, and I mean, you also know this too, like guys in skateboarding, skateboard for a long time, they're really good, and then like no, all they do is smoke weed, and that just kind of becomes like their thing instead.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, it was always interesting traveling with some people sometimes who like, we would get to a new country or state and like there was just this like absolute focus on like finding the weed guy, you know, and it was just like so silly. It was like every, there was like this heightened level of stress in the van until like they found the local who could like secure the weed, and then it was like, all right, chill, good vibes. And yeah, I mean, I think nowadays, can you fly with weed? I don't really know how it is.
I don't think you can in the United States, because it's still, because all the airports are run by the Fed, and it's still,
oh, so it's still, yeah, yeah,
still okay. Federally yeah. illegal. But because like, yeah. so like the state I live in just got legalized marijuana, and okay. I took a flight with my brother-in-law 2 weeks ago, and we went to Colorado, and I was like, oh, are you going to bring weed back? He's like, no, you can't take it on the plane. I was kind of surprised. I was that's bizarre to me that you can't.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, that's, yeah, there's a lot of like totally, you know, socially accepted addictions, I want to say, that are like free, like constant in the skateboarding industry, and also marketed, you know? So it's like, whether it's booze or weed, it's like, becomes a part of like the skater's persona that is
I feel like that's toned down now though, like mid 2000s, like Baker Boys type, it was like a huge part of the marketing. Yeah. I feel like it, that's less, I maybe even the other ways, like sort of like the you know, Huberman lifestyle, stretching,
right,
and like drinking water, like, and stuff, like I feel like that's actually, I mean, that's kind of big and society in general, so skateboarding just mirrors that, but yeah, that's totally. I feel like more serious now.
Yeah, totally. But you know, I mean, you see these videos still where it's just like slow-mo, like smoking the, you know, like smoke coming out of the blunt,
smoke coming out of the blunt, like little, it's just going up to the rail to I mean, so the process of filming apart as a professional skateboarder now, so you came out with this part, textures to, in order to promote the book. What was the last part you did, was the Wilshire one where all the clips were on Wilshire. So what was your, I mean, that's so different from how things, and you get into this a little bit in the book, you know, they used to be these big hour long artistic, you know, productions. You'd have Ty Evans blowing up Mike Mocapaldi and CGI and skits and, you know, front salad, back salad, front blunt.
Yeah.
And now it's, you just are like, how do you film a part now? Like, is it just you and a filmer and you're coordinating on it? Like what is that even like now?
Yeah. So it's just a bunch of, you know, an accumulation of days like today. Like, so I'm in New York right now. I have a group of friends who are, you know, like always down to skate, Mark Suchu, Jack Fardell, and then a few random people are in town. And, you know, you hit up the filmer, Matt, hey, you free to skate today? Yeah, let's meet up. So, you know, we skate, and I was able to film a clip, tried a couple other things, didn't work out. And, you know, that one clip I hold on to until I have like 50 others. You know, I try to, right now I'll probably try to put something out once I get like 20 or something. I want to put out like another little edit. But, you know, that's kind of the gist. It's like, I started skating at 10. I came home just before this, so like, you know, that's a 8-hour day, and you kind of just have to like, I am a very I don't know how to put it, because it's like kind of a kooky trait, but it's also like, I feel like effective in like getting things done. It's like I have like a bunch of things I want to do, you know, like I have a bunch of goals or spots I want to skate. A lot of skaters, you know, they just sort of like let the day take them where it takes them, and they might feel inspired in the moment to film something, or, you know, they just let it ride. But I have limited time to skate, so I'm just like, I want to do this, and I want to do like 5 other things. And so I wanted to do one thing, the few other things didn't really work, I kind of hurt myself. And so, you know, that's one thing I have, and I'll just add it to the timeline. And so after a certain amount of time, you feel like, okay, I like how this is looking. I'm not a big a lot of people count like how many minutes they have, like, all right, I got 5 minutes of footage, like, now let's make it a part. I like to count how many like clips I have. And so with this last part, once I felt like I had a good amount, you know, it had been a weird 2020 2021 basically, but 2022 I had a pretty good stride and like filmed a good amount of stuff. it was all about just figuring out the last few things I needed. And yeah, one of those tricks happened, I was like, okay, cool, I'm good. This feels complete.
The switch 360 backside flip.
Yep, the switchback 360 kickflip was a nightmare to get. But once I had that, I felt good. And then it was all about like filling in the little gaps. And this part is different than, because it felt like a production when we were filming the intro. We were in Sicily with my wife and my friend Patrick and his wife. And, you know, we had this idea for a skit. And so we took that part very, you know, pretty seriously, because we wanted to make like sort of a little mini movie feeling for the intro to the part. And, you know, getting that done was a big like, okay, cool. Now this really feels like something we can start to finalize. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just it's a labor of love. And it's like, it's weird because in the last couple of years, I haven't been making a lot of money from sponsors. So this isn't expected of me, but it's just something I really love doing. And I love watching videos. And as long as I'm able to like continue to skate at a certain level, like I want to put out videos. It's like these novels kind of, you know, like I just,
right.
I like the ask, you know, the start concept, or just, you know, what sort of you're thinking on a daily, what kind of like comes out of you. And then you just like put it together in a complete little package.
So are you, when you're organizing these things out, like, do you have like a trick book? Like, are you writing stuff out? Like, okay, I think I saw you talk about this on Instagram, the switch impossible over the bar. You're like, I wanted to do that trick for like 5 years. And then I finally found the spot. Like, is it spots? Is it tricks? Like, how is that organized?
Yeah, it's a mixture. So like sometimes it's just a trick that I want to do, like the switchback 3 kickflip or a switch impossible over something substantial. And then I just throw them out there whenever an opportunity comes up. So with the switch impossible, I had initially thought like, I got to do it over a picnic table and in Los Angeles. So when I was living in LA, I tried it several times and just couldn't do it. And then I'd be in France and there'd be a cool street gap, or I'd be in London and there'd be a cool street gap, or I'd be in, you know, San Francisco and there's a cool barrier to do it over. And, you know, I would pick these battles and always lose them. And so in New York, the one that I decided on was this rail at Union Square. And then I just went back like three or four times to do it. And so that's like, you know, okay, cool. And even that one, I'm still like not 100% satisfied with, because it was a little sketchy, but it happened that day. So I'll,
no, those are the tricks that live the longest though, right? It's like, yeah. The landing is not exactly perfect. Like, you know, Brian Harman hard flipping down the stairs, or hard flipping down the stairs and then running into the fence and doing the switch flip back off it. Like, that's the stuff that lives forever, you know?
Totally. I like that reference. Yeah. 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 The spontaneous things, the maybe messy, but you know, whatever character they have character.
You mentioned,
so yeah, so it's go on.
No, you go first, because I was going to change. I was going to change the train of thought.
So there are those tricks that, like, you know, I'm set on, doesn't really matter where it happens. And then, you know, depending on which city I'm in, like in New York, I'm just, when I run errands, I find spots and have a spot book, and I just have a massive archive of potential spots depending on the day. And like, some, you know, it can just be so hit or miss. Like, I want to skate this spot down the street, but there's always a car in the way. So you just have to wait, and you just have to like find that time when you're with the filmer and you're passing by and there's no car and it's a go. Or like, you know, you get kicked out normally in the first 2 minutes, and some days you get 10 minutes. So it's just about having like a massive, for me, it's about having like a massive list of spots where, you know, I just want to try to skate them because they're cool. And then seeing what you can get in those like limited amounts of time.
I feel like skating in New York, just ask for a professional skateboarder, I feel like that's like a capital C choice. Like, it's harder to skate in New York City than it is if you live in Los Angeles, where there are perfect spots all the time. Like, you know where you can and can't, like you kind of know where you can skate in Los Angeles, whereas in New York,
it's honestly, I think New York is the best skate city in the world. I think it's so it's actually, it seems overwhelming in that way. And it can feel like that at times, but really there is so much here. There are so many parks that are just like open, not skate parks, just parks that just have parks. Spots. There are so many just random areas that you can explore. Like, it's just so endless. Like, if I was really here just like full time for years at a time, like, I'm sure I would get sick of it, but there would also be so much to get done, because on any given day you can just like, you can hit 30 spots. Whereas in LA, you might have that one spot that you know you can skate, but it's around nothing else, you know? So
you got to drive 45 minutes there.
Yeah. Whereas this, you can just get lost and end up having like the best day ever. And it's just so accessible in that way. So it's a hard, hard disagree there, because I just love this. I love skating here so much, compared to LA or most other places, I've lived or been. It's really incredible.
Well, I guess maybe even more so, like, that's gotta be, like, you know, you're established, you've been like a capital S skateboarder for a long time, like a dude who's trying to make it right now. Although I guess has Instagram changed that? Like, of like, oh, I turned 16 and I got to move to California and go find someone to go find a floor to sleep on until I get, you know, flow or whatever. Yeah. It's like, I guess Instagram has probably changed that. Convex, I guess.
Definitely. Yeah. It's made it so much easier to make a name for yourself, no matter where you are in the world. You know, just post your clips and make them go viral and people start taking notice, you know. Or you create a sort of dedicated fan base, which can happen for a lot of these kids too.
Right. Okay. So cool. you mentioned Mark Suchu. How would you explain Skater of the Year, like you were explaining it in the book? Like, if Skater of the Year came up in whatever your next novel is that you write, how would you break down explaining that to someone who like barely gets the concept of professional skateboarding?
Man, that's a tough one, because I feel like in some ways Skater of the Year it's just a magazine that is known for being a very respected, it's the magazine in skateboarding.
It's the magazine now, pretty much.
And it's them, their editorial board picking who they think is the best skater of the year, who had the best year, who put out the best skateboarding. So it's kind of as simple as that. It's almost like Thrasher turning someone pro for the year.
Right.
Which just means like, who do they think, you know, like really embodies skateboarding for the year. And it can mean all number of things, but it usually means who put out the most progressive street skateboarding videos. And Mark was it in 2021. And, you know, I feel like it was due to his volume of video content, but also the quality of the video content he was putting out. And that's pretty much it. You know, he was up against he wasn't up against, but basically the skate world wanted to either see Yuto, who had just won the Olympics and put out some good video footage, or Mark, who didn't compete in the Olympics, didn't, you know, do notably well in contests, but he was very prolific in what he put out on YouTube, which is weird to say, but
which is crazy. Four parts in December, pretty much.
Yeah. And, you know, the quality was just there. So they made him Skater of the Year. And it's kind of the same thing happened last year with Tyshawn, you know, put out three very strong video parts with tricks that were, I feel like what's needed for a Skater of the Year, or historically what happens, is they do something that pushes the envelope a little bit, something that's like progressive enough that really hasn't happened. So, but it's totally up to Thrasher, you know, so they're the ones making the call. It's a weird one.
Which is kind of crazy. Although I think Tyshawn winning is actually an example of something that you get into in the book, which is, so basically Richie and Mo are kind of trying to explain why contest skaters are different, why they're a different breed, why filming a street part and up to a layperson's brain, they're like, that makes no sense. It's the same activity. Yeah. I don't get why doing this trick on a street corner in Turkmenistan is cooler than doing it in Tokyo in the Olympics or whatever.
Right.
And Nyjah basically did put what he had like a 12 minute part. He's like going up and over handrails. And I think my guess would be a layperson, you'd show them Tyshawn stuff, you'd show them Nyjah stuff back to back, and you'd be like, you got to pick. And I think a layperson would say, oh, you got to go with Nyjah. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got scars, you know, you're seeing him bleed and stuff. And I literally think for most people who probably think like you and I, they see the kickflip over the subway and they're like, I don't even need to see anything else. Like that is just, and that was so cool in and of itself. Like that's the thing. He's the guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to lie. When I saw Nyjah's part, I was like, whoa, I don't know how
it's unbelievable.
I don't know how they won't be able to give it to him. Cause he really is completely pushing the envelope. I think there could be an argument that, you know, it's similar to what he does in skate parks, like on big rails, which is like, can dilute the experience of watching it. Maybe like, you know, it's like, oh, big nollie back heel into a back nollie heel into a back lip or so there could be that argument, but really it just comes down to subjective tastes. And there's like an accessibility with Tyshawn skating, I think, where it's like, I understand what a kickflip is, but I do not understand how you can do it that far or that big. And like, I can do a switch flip on the ground, on the flat ground, but like to do it over a can is insane in a line. So there's sort of like that. They just push the envelope in two different ways. So it's kind of like up to you to pick what you
to pick
prefer,
what you like,
you know? And I think Thrasher, you know, they picked Tyshawn. He's like more on brand maybe. I don't know. There's a lot of just subjectivity there. So
yeah, which is in something that determines people's livelihoods, skateboarding. Yeah. Cause you can't like that. That's such a huge part of it. Like if someone wants to be a professional football player, there's really no subjectivity in that. Like one of my friends, Patrick Laird, he is a running back in the NFL and it's not like he goes to a meeting and he goes to practice and he's doing his thing. And it's not, the coaches are not going to be like, oh yeah, you know, we just kind of like we like the way you run, bro. Like we're gonna play you instead of Rashad White because we just kind of like your vibe. You know, there's none of that. Whereas
it's
in stats, skateboarding,
right?
that's the whole thing. You know, it's like you know, like the way Gino pushes, I'll watch that dude do like, you know, no complies on flat ground just because I like the way he pushes his skateboard, which sounds like clinically insane to someone outside of skateboarding.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, that is the funniest thing to make that comparison. Like if you're a pro skater and almost a pro athlete in almost any other sport to be like, well, you know, like the way he like dresses is just cooler.
It's just cooler.
Or it's just like, or like the style is just kind of like better. Like the tricks aren't as good, but the style, it's like, what? Like, why does that matter? So I feel like it sounds pretty nuts.
Yeah, it does. So not to try and give you ideas for your next book, but I do think people don't really talk about this. You're getting more of this now in our day and age where everyone's doing podcasts, but like what happens when a pro skater is like 42 and can't really, like some guys are still doing it, you know, Reynolds, varial heel flipping a triple set at 43. It's like one of the, like to me, it's like that's trick of the year for me because that shouldn't even be like humanly possible. But like, you know, Cairo Foster retired and is now he's the team manager of
Mob.
So, Mob. There we go. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. But like, and you know, you hear of like some of these guys, you know, they just like they were kind of pros, but they didn't have a pro shoe or whatever. And then it's like, oh, that guy's, he works at the warehouse for the company he rode for or whatever, which, and you would hope these companies would do good by a lot of their guys, but a lot of them don't because they don't really have any incentive to.
Right. So what's the question?
Oh, okay. So question would basically be, I mean, like, what's the deal with that? I don't know. What's the industry consensus? Do people talk about that? Do people think about that? Is that even, are people even thinking about like what's coming next at all?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's tough to say. I mean, it all just depends on personal relationships. You know, every pro skater has sort of a different track, but the gist of it is that pro skaters are like models. you know, you do some representing for the brand, and then you're, you know, let's bring in the new hot chick or hot dude. You know, that's kind of like, that's kind of just it. And I think the problem in skating is that there's a lot of this, like, oh, we're family. Like, there's so much like a name tied to a brand that like is kind of bullshit, in my opinion. It's like part of marketing, and it's sadly like how you'll feel as a pro skater. You're really like a part of something, but you know, you're just being used and as part of their marketing. And if you're lucky, you find a job within that company, and that sometimes happens. But from my experience, it also doesn't happen a lot, because there's only so many jobs like that, and they're often filled by skaters who weren't spending time pro skating. They were like, you know, working the industry angle and like finding jobs and then getting them. And so that's sort of like the harsh reality of how the industry works, you know. And it's, you know, like as messed up as it is, it's like these skaters want to do this, you know, like they're seizing the opportunity, even if it's just to be paid for a couple years and to travel. And, you know, like in a perfect world, they would be a little bit more set up, but they're just, you know, they're getting hired to represent a brand for a limited period of time. It's not necessarily as limited as like a model goes on as how a model might go on a shoot, but it sort of works in that same kind of way.
I guess it's like transactional in both ways. Like in one way, you know, skateboarders get like, they get to skateboard. That's what a skateboarder wants to do. And the company is getting, you know, whatever marginal marketing gains they're getting from being associated with that guy. But it is, I mean, that is what you just said kind of reminded me of like startup culture, where it's like, oh dude, we're a family. You gotta work, you gotta work overtime. You gotta work weekends. You gotta sleep in the office, because we're family. We're all in this together until we don't need you anymore. And then we're not a family, which is, I never really made that connection before, but which is kind of gross. That actually kind of bummed me out to think of that.
Yeah. Sorry. Are you in the startup world mostly?
It's kind of, basically, my job is not like that. It's not, but I have, so my job before I worked for this company was big startup culture, like kind of not, which is gross. Startup culture is gross. Like grind set culture, entrepreneur culture, angel, like that's all so gross to me.
So,
so go ahead.
My wife's in, works for a startup, but she looks at skating as like the worst thing ever. So if that says anything.
at the tactics of the companies,
just the way it all works, and not just my experience, but what she's, you know, what she sees. And I'm so jaded by it, because I've just been a part of it, and I've followed it since I was a kid, and I've sort of like, you know, been in that world. So you get used to certain things, but so many of the practices are just pretty unethical.
I mean, there are, and like, you, I think there are like examples that anyone could point out of like, this company did right by so and so, and that you know, that makes it better for when 10 guys don't get done right by the company. Or like, the one that always sticks out to me is like, guy like still getting checks from girl for a long time when he should, you know, was not skating or whatever. But you know, then there's a lot of like Terry Kennedy situations where it was like, that was all bad all around for everyone, you know. And it is it's gross.
And it's true. There is that side of it that, you know, you can get a check from a company for years and they don't really expect much of you. And you can say that's nice, but they're also selling a board with your name or a product, or, you know, using your name in some kind of a way. True. So it's, you can look at it both ways for sure.
Yeah, that's interesting. I would like to talk to your wife about the differences, because that seems really interesting to me. So in the book, like sort of the interstitial is a podcast transcript.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering, like, how much are you, because you travel a lot, are you listening to a ton of podcasts? Like, are you like a true crime junkie? Like, that part was fascinating to me.
Yeah. So I will say, I mean, I love podcasts, obviously. And I especially love the type that are, you know, sort of the serial investigative. I haven't gone down a wormhole of just being like full true crime junkie in any kind of way. I like, but I, I listen to a lot of just interviews, but I definitely love the This American Life format storytelling. And so the character Nina, I had her working at a you know, like a radio station.
Yeah, it was very NPR, very NPR.
Definitely, yeah, like an NPR type radio station. And she's like working there, but not really a producer. She just like proof listens and does kind of like busybody work. And so she, of course, wants to produce her own. So she sort of like capitalizes on this, like, my love interest has disappeared. And I think there's a lot of weird shit going on. And I'm going to, you know, like dive in this kind of way. So, yeah, every chapter starts with a snippet transcript from what would be like this longer form podcast that I kind of like leave open ended. You know, it's like it sort of starts and then the story plays out, but it's happening. The story happened before. So it's kind of, it's right. Just a fun way to like tease out things in a different way. Have shows, you know, have some like different reveals happen in the podcast form versus just like this normal narrative. So it was just a device I hadn't really seen in a book. And I thought it'd be fun.
Yeah, I liked it.
Cool. Yeah. As a podcaster, I'm glad.
Something that's cool is I don't read a lot of, like current fiction, really. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of, like, if I'm reading something that came out in the last decade, it's like normally nonfiction. So yeah. Sort of like characters with like being on like having iPhones and like podcasts and stuff is like, that's still sort of novel for me. Cause mostly yeah. I'm still just like reading my college reading list or whatever. Cause there's right. so many great books in the world. You never have time to read enough of them.
I know.
So I was a creative writing major in college. So while that was happening, while I'm writing, you know, these short stories and stuff in college, I'm like, all this technology is just going to change so much about how we view fiction and how our brains process all of this. Like, there's got to be a lot of like horrible fiction written in the mid 2000s about what people thought communication and technology was going to be. And I feel like it's more crystallized and was done well in your book, how characters communicate with each other.
Yeah, cool. I know. I think what has been a little bit of a, I don't want to say, what's been a difficulty is really having the characters, because the two main characters I've made have things happen to them, but they're offline in a sense, like they aren't Instagram people. And I feel like for both stories, there'd be a lot that would just be like easier if they just had Instagram, you know, but sure. Because they don't, it makes them more of an anomaly and it makes things happen in a different kind of way. Like just, you know, like, oh, if Mo just was an Instagrammer constantly, you'd be more up to date on his life and you know where he was. He wouldn't disappear.
I mean, he could have generated plenty of affiliate deals. Like Mo, this dude, he's an interesting dude. He's handsome in the book. Like this, like he could have become an influencer skateboarder for sure.
Totally. Yeah. So there is this sort of like, I'm like hearkening back to when like there wasn't these like easy tools for some of the characters. So I feel like what's trickier, I don't know. I've just played with that. It's like they live in the world where all that technology is normal, but they sort of remain like a little bit rooted in the past, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, that's kind of the vibe you get from Mo anyways, is that he would have really thrived before iPhones were a thing. Yeah. What was writing like? You know, you're filming skateboarding at the same time. Although I guess there was a lot of downtime during COVID, or more so than there would have been in a normal year. But like, are you like filming clips for 8 hours and then coming home and like banging out a couple pages?
It's more the other way around. Like I wake up really early and do some writing in the morning. So like today from like 8 to 9, I like picked away at this new one I'm working on. And then, that's pretty much it. Every now and then, like when it comes down to the end, I'll like really clock in and spend more hours, like end meaning like I'm revising and I got my notes back from the copy editor and I'm like really changing things. But the actual getting words on the page happens in the morning.
Okay, that's interesting.
I just pick away like little by little, you know, like I'm not one of these people that really, maybe I'm sort of ADD or something, but I can't just like, all right, 5 hours, I'm just cranking it out. You know, like I really just like let the ideas come and try to make it natural and fun and not feel forced. that makes any sense.
What's your strategy for keeping everything straight? Like, are you developing a linear narrative and going backwards? Like, to me, that's always seemed like one of the hardest things. Like for maybe a literary novel like yours, it's maybe not as difficult, but I've always wondered, like, these science fiction writers.
Yeah.
It's like, you're like, you have like all these complex things going on. Like, how are you like making, you know, everything agree with each other across 300 pages? That seems crazy.
Totally. Yeah. And I actually just finished reading, my friend wrote like a sci-fi novel, and I finished reading it and just gave him notes yesterday. And yeah, I mean, I had so many questions for him too. It's like, all right, what is the rule in this, on this planet? Like, you've set up the rules, like, does it always apply? It didn't really seem like it did. Or like, you know, little things like that, like just making it just seems overwhelming. So for me, you know, I definitely, this one was complicated because I had these two timelines happening. Right. I had this like timeline of when she's writing/producing this podcast. And then I have the timeline of like when everything happened, and they were really tight. Like, everything had to like fit. So I have an Excel sheet that like I was doing it on. So like I have like dates and then what's happening for each character. So I did like kind of go in that way, but normally
I think that's kind of common to do. Yeah. To do like just like an actual like write out the key events and then fill in the text through. Yeah. There.
Yeah, but for the most part, it's just these like these moleskins, you know, like I just sort of like I
oh that's
little...
very that's very brooding handsome skateboarder on the subway of you to have a moleskin full of
never
notes.
never on the subway. But basically it's like I just sort of jot out a rough outline of what I would want to put, what I want to happen next, or like, all right, here's, let me just summarize it, the whole story once again for myself. It's like each chapter is a sentence, so I can keep that sort of fresh, you know. But I don't necessarily refer back to them. It's just sort of like crank out an idea. Right. And then, so I kind of have a guideline in a sense.
Okay, cool. All right. Last thing I want to ask you about, a trend that I think is awesome in skateboarding, which is you and Dr. Kyle Brown do this on Old Friends Fitness. You guys have a Patreon that's a lot about rehabbing like specific skateboarding injuries. I have to credit Dr. Andrew Huberman, who's been on the Nine Club. Obviously he's got his own thing that's like the biggest podcast in the world right now, pretty much.
Yeah,
like
he's
every time
blowing up. It's like
you meet like a 28-year-old dude who's got a jug of water and he's like, you listen to Huberman, bro? It's like, which is a conversation I love to have, because I think this is my favorite trend ever in skateboarding. Yeah. It's like dudes taking their mental and physical health so seriously, and like getting 8 hours of sleep and like getting sunlight in their eyes. So I guess the question would be, one, like, are you seeing that, like, are you guys like at sessions, are people talking about like, yeah, I, you know, I'm taking my magnesium and getting my sleep right to like keep my health good? And is that something that we'd like, you know, to extend skateboarding? Like, I feel like it's super important that dudes should be doing this. Like, are they?
Yeah, I mean, I was at Columbus Circle, the skate spot today, and this up-and-coming ripper who I've seen like a couple clips from, who's definitely like really sick. I don't know how old he is. I'm guessing early 20s. You know, he pulls up to the spot and starts swinging his legs, which is like the type of warm-up stretching. It is stretching. It doesn't look like it, but that's what Dr. Kyle Brown calls
dynamic
stretching. Yeah. So just to see that going down is like a good sign. And I see that constantly. You know, I see like young skaters who are super serious about their, you know, like pre-skate warm-up/workout, their like off day workout, you know, like the kind of strengthening workouts they're doing, and definitely diet. I mean, I feel like diet in the lifestyle of a skater doesn't quite align. Like, skaters still want to be like having a bunch of beers and like eating a bunch of shitty food,
eating fast food. Yeah.
But I feel like there's definitely a conscious effort happening, and it's, I don't want to go so far as to say it's cool, but it's definitely accepted to take better care of your body than when I was coming up. I feel like people just like didn't care.
No one cared. Yeah. Like beers at 8 o'clock in the morning for sure on any skate trip. Like that is just what you did.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, man.
That's nice to see.
Yeah, it is. It's awesome. I really appreciate the time. The book is off Clark. It's very, very good. I'd recommend it. Honestly, actually, it's probably even better if you are not big into skateboarding, which I don't think anyone who listens to this show is big into skateboarding, so that'll be cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. And that means a lot to hear because you mean better than the first one.
Oh, well, yeah, it was it is better than the first one, in my opinion.
Cool.
No shade on the, I just think you learned more and got, I think it's also like a more compelling narrative too. Like cool. It was a cool story. And, but I actually think it's better if you aren't really into skateboarding. I actually think it's a cooler story if you're like learning about skateboarding through this book.
Cool. Yeah, I appreciate that. That's definitely in the back of my mind when I'm writing this. Like, all right, what would the non-skater think or take away? And it really means a lot that you just read the thing, you know? I mean, I always just say to people when they reach out, tell me that they enjoyed it, just like, thank you for even reading it. So,
yeah, stoked. Hell yeah, dude. Yeah. Well, the book is off Clark. You can also read The Top of Mason, and you can check out more of Walker's cool shit on oldfriendsandco.com. They got a Patreon. You can get a bunch of cool stretching, peeling type. But I mean, a lot of us get a little bit older and the nicks and scratches stick around a little bit longer. They have some cool gear on there that I bought and used. It's all good. Everyone, cool. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back next week.
NetCredit is here to say yes, because you're more than a credit score. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partners. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.